Good day, everyone. Welcome back to the W3C Verifiable Credentials for Education Task Force. This is Simone, one of the three co-chairs of this task force. It's Monday, September 26th, and we have a very interesting chat today that we're hosting. Before we do that, as many of you know, we have to go through a few housekeeping items. I'll do that, and then I'll introduce our guest for today. So, these calls are free for everyone to participate in. However, if you're making any substantial contribution to any of these work items, you need to be a member of the Credentials Community Group with full IPR agreement signed. To do that, you'll find the link on the agenda that you have received. And it's very easy. You just need to set up a W3C account and sign a contributor license agreement. Call notes. So there are audio recordings and transcripts of these calls. So everything that is said is archived online at the Credentials Community Group website. Again, that link is available in the email that you received. To keep this coordinated, we use the chat. Typically, if you want to get on a queue, just type Q plus, and that will add you to the queue. Also, you could raise your hand, and that will still do the same until we know that you want to contribute. Just so you know, as a word of caution, try to be brief and succinct in the comments, so we'll get everyone to participate. All right, those are some of the housekeeping things that we had to go through. At this moment, I'd like to move into introductions and reintroductions. So at this stage, if there's anyone that has not been here and wants to introduce themselves, this is the time to do it. Or if you have been with us and you just want to reintroduce yourself, feel free to do that as well. Okay, you could always, of course, reintroduce yourself as you comment later on during the call. Let's move on to announcement and reminders. This is just an open space for everyone to share events or things that you want the task force to be aware of. So if you do, please feel free to, again, put yourself in the queue or just simply speak up. Okay, so I'll just start with one. It's the obvious one. As many of you know here, together with Jobs for the Future, JFF, we are co-organizing an interoperability plug fest that is in full swing. The demo day will be held on November 14th in a in-person event in Mountain View. If you have any questions, again, this is a forum where we could take those. But, you know, that is certainly one of the things that we're mostly focused on here in BC Edger right now. All right, so I'd say we switch gears and we move into the main topic for today. As anticipated, today we have the opportunity of having with us the core team from the European Commission that is working on the European blockchain service infrastructure. Specifically, you know, our focus is on the diploma use case. And the topic really that we want to address today or that we want to hear about is the issuer trust model that the EBSI team has been working on. And to do that, we have representatives from that team. I would like to call on to Joao to introduce himself, and please feel free to introduce your teammates or hand it over to whoever is going to share with us. So, Joao, thank you. The floor is yours. Thank you for being with us.
No, it's us that has to thank you for inviting us to be here. I have to change my camera because this is the side camera. I don't like it. But my name is João Rodrigues Frade, and I am the head of sector of the building blocks and of the European blockchain services infrastructure. I think Maxine and Alan are also here, guys.
so okay, it stopped working immediately. Hi, I'm here. Nice to see you all.
Oh, okay. It doesn't change. I don't know.
Technical failures.
Go ahead, Maxine. I can change the camera.
Okay, I'll introduce myself quickly. So, João is the head of sector within DG Digit, the IT directorate of the European Commission. I work within his team, and together with Alan, who's our lead architect, one of the projects, building blocks that we are developing is the European blockchain services infrastructure, the purpose of which is to find out the ways in which blockchain can enable cross-border public services in Europe and beyond, and with a particular focus on today on the use case of verifiable credentials as applied to blockchain, where the blockchain part is used primarily for the verification purposes. And the way we do this is by having built a trust model where issuers of verifiable credentials are accredited and their accreditations are registered on the ledger. So I believe that this is what we're going to present to you today. João, please compliment that you got your camera.
I will start. I'm just trying to understand exactly how to share content. But in the meantime, Alan, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I'm going to ask you to pause for 1 second. This is Carrie Lemoyne. Sorry, Simone, we're not getting the transcript in the chat. Do you mind turning that on manually for us?
Yep. Let me do that again.
Sorry to interrupt you all, but.
No problem.
This needs a little tweak. Thank you.
Let's see. So I did. You should see the transcriber popping up. Yeah, thank you, transcriber, and welcome. Back over to you, João. Thanks, Gary.
Thank you. So we have a third member of the team, and that is Alan. Go ahead, Alan. Just a brief introduction. I will try to share my presentation here while you are introducing yourself. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Alan. I mean, some of you know me from the DIF working group, but I'm the lead architect at EBSI, and I will present some of the technical details of the issuer trust model and show you some examples.
Okay, okay. So, without further delay, I cannot really share a window for some reason. I really cannot understand, guys. So I will share my screen. I know, maybe like this it will work. Because we typically use Teams, and I don't know exactly what system is this one. Do you see my screen?
Yes, we do. Thank you, João.
Yes, it's not in presentation mode, right?
It's not in presentation mode, but, you know, we're not that picky.
I will go now in presentation mode, and I will wind down here the presentation quickly. So to give you a bit of context, the three of us, we come from the Director General for Informatics in the European Commission. So we are actually doing the work of implementing the first pan-European blockchain in Europe, which will be driven by the member states. So even though the technology that is underpinning the blockchain is quite known to all of you, it's Ethereum Peso, the governance structure is based on the member states. Maybe, Maxine, do you want to explain a bit about the EBP?
Of course. So, can I get this working again? Am I here?
Yes.
I'm here. Fantastic. Okay. The European Commission is a complex animal, as is the European Union, and EBSI is no exception. It is a collaborative project. So, it is a project that is owned by European Commission, specifically by DG Connect, that is responsible for digital policy. But it is co-steered by an alliance of European member countries. So it is the 27 European Union member states plus Norway, Liechtenstein, and Ukraine as observer, who form what is called the European Blockchain Partnership. And the European Blockchain Partnership and the European Commission are responsible for the strategic direction and steering of the European blockchain services infrastructure. And part of that is the definition of all of the business capabilities that we want to build using blockchain in order to fulfill public services. And one of those use cases is verifiable credentials as applied to education and lifelong learning, which is the primary focus of what we're going to talk about today, because that is the one for which we have developed a quite sophisticated issuer's trust model. And A last thing that's worth mentioning is that not only is the steering of the strategy of EBSI decentralized, but also the actual node network that forms the, you know, the actual ledger is decentralized as well. So there are nodes hosted in all of those 29 countries, a subset of them, but across all of Europe. And that's basically host the ledger and expose the APIs that are necessary in order to enable actors to record things on ledger or read from the ledger. So
in a nutshell, we are working with all member states. The blockchain itself will go live, we hope, still this year. Has been a project, a long, long project. We have been confronted with a lot of legal uncertainty. And building a blockchain from scratch is not for everyone. But we are getting there, and so we hope to have EBSI, or the European Blockchain Services Infrastructure, fully online and fully available to everyone, to the public services that want to build on top of the blockchain by the end of the year. For the moment, we are in pre-production. So as explained by Maxine, we have a number of services that are currently in the process of being built. And we are focusing mostly on the idea of verification with verifiable credentials. We have not only the diploma use case, but we also have social security and the identity use case. The identity use case is a bit frozen for the moment, but we are mostly focusing on the mobility of workers with social security and the mobility of students with diploma. So in a nutshell, we are working on blockchain. We are working on verifiable credentials, not only for education, but in general. And we are also, of course, using digital wallets to store these verifiable credentials. The wallets, they are not built by EBSI. The wallets, they come directly from different providers in the market. I don't know, Maxine, if you want to say something about the engagement with wallets, or we leave it for later.
I can complement.
Okay.
So our approach has been not to undercut the market, but rather to allow it to flourish and provide the services that are needed for holders, for issuers, for verifiers to interact with EBSI. And in order to ensure that they are able to connect to our APIs and perform the services that are needed, we've developed conformance testing. It's a service that we run from the European Commission that allows any market software provider to test whether their wallet is actually compatible with our specifications for verifiable credentials. And at the moment, our conformance testing has 15 conformant wallets confirmed. We launched it in the first quarter of this year, and we are constantly trying to obviously recruit new conformant wallets. It is very much a work in progress. We are still updating our specifications as we go, so we expect that there will be additional features that will be tested for conformance in the future.
Exactly. And the verifiable credentials profile that we are working on, we call it EBSI verifiable credentials profile, based or completely compatible, or let's say it's just a profile of the W3C1, so there is nothing special there. Of course, we have to create a profile because there's no other way of using it, and we will explain in more detail how we are currently trying to apply these three technologies to the mobility of students in Europe. And the context, again, is this large project that we call European Blockchain Services Infrastructure. So keep this in mind when we move forward. So this is what this slide tries to explain. We have not really a mandate as European Commission to transition to verifiable credentials. This is a more like innovation track that is running in parallel to what DG Emploi and DG EAC, which are policy DGs of the Commission, are already doing. We are complementing that with an innovative way to enable verification of diplomas, which can then be taken up or not, but hopefully yes, by the policy DGs. So in the European Commission, again, you have different policy DGs. We come from DIGIT, the informatics DG. We are really doing the work here of putting this to action and making it work with the member states. We are also supported financially by the program of DG Connect and by DG Connect itself. That is more the broader DG in terms of digital policy. But then when it comes to education, there are two other DGs that are specifically working in this field, and they look at us as an innovation track. So there is no commitment from the European Commission to transition diploma verification to W3C verifiable credentials. So don't get that idea after this presentation that the European Commission has committed itself together with the member states to move fully to W3C verifiable credentials, because that's not the case. What we are doing is to work with this group of member states, the EPP and the other DGs, in innovating and using these technologies for verification purposes, and specifically for the cross-border verification of diplomas in Europe.
João, just a question. Sorry, I'm not sure whether you were commenting on your slide that you're sharing, or this is just a general overview, because your slides are not moving.
No, they're not. Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know exactly. It's a bit frustrating because I don't know even if my camera is working. You see my slide with Eva there, no?
Yes.
You see a slide with, now you see it. It was.
But we're not in presentation mode, Joel.
I cannot see it. You see, I just see my screen. So I'm going to, is now in presentation mode? Because
no.
I see it in presentation mode. No. Okay. So, okay. Doesn't matter. I think as long as you have because what I can do, and I'm sorry because we should have tested this software, I have no clue what you guys are actually seeing. What I will do is to present my screen, not the, and maybe this will help. And then I have, okay, so now my camera is working. We don't know this software, so we are experimenting as we move along. Okay, this works. So I will try again to share content. Okay. And I will share my screen. Boom. Okay, and then, okay, and now this is going to be in presentation mode, I guess. Is it?
Yes, it is. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, so this is what I was trying to explain, is that we have carried out a number of pilots with the member states to do cross-border verification of diplomas using W3C verifiable credentials. But again, this is an innovation track of the European Commission. This is not a commitment from the policy side that we are moving towards verifiable credentials even in the near future. But nothing stops us to promote this track alongside the work that is already happening, being by the JAC, because we are in contact with them, in the Erasmus Without Paper project, or the J'Emploi with the Aeropass platform, and we reuse the model of Aeropass when we created the verifiable credential. So this is done in collaboration with the policy DGs, but it's not a commitment from the policy side to actually adopt what we are doing at large, even though we are already working together with them to make this happen.
João, can I ask you for a clarification? I'm sorry.
Sharon
has a question. It's in the chat, but I'm going to read this out loud. So you mentioned that the EC is not currently moving toward verifiable credentials. I don't know if that was a misunderstanding, but can you say more about why that is, or what are you currently focusing instead?
So in the commission, there are policy DGs that are responsible for specific policies. And the DG that is actually responsible for education is called DGEAC. And of course, they have a certain mandate within the education domain. As you know, the European Commission cannot set, you know, and they know better than I do. So I will just broadly explain that, of course, the Commission cannot determine that, for example, everyone in Europe has to express a diploma in the Europass format or in a verifiable credential format. Most of the initiatives that are happening are funding initiatives, so there is grants and money given, or within specific domains where the European Commission actually has a driver role. We are collaborating with both EAC and with EMPLOA, that are the two DGs that are currently working on credentials for education. And we are, let's say, influencing that process where, for example, the Europass platform soon will be able to express credentials, education credentials, in W3C verifiable credentials format, which currently is not the case. They are having a pure XML format, and they will be moving with the same data model of the diploma to a W3C verifiable credentials format. Now, when we do this, we do alongside with them and in collaboration, but that doesn't mean that we are in control of the Europass platform. That is DG EMPLOA. So they might provide that additional feature, and those that are interested to go there and create, as they call, a account and you know, participate in the Europass platform, they will be able to choose verifiable credentials as a format. But what would be wrong for us is to come here and give you the impression that there is a sort of mandate on the member states that they are now sort of obliged to use W3C verifiable credentials. That would be wrong, because that's not the case. What we are saying is that we are working with initiatives of the European Commission, such as Europass and Erasmus Without Paper, that are initiatives with a specific mandate to support them in the development of these initiatives with an innovation track that we started in pilot mode under the European Blockchain Services Infrastructure Initiative, which is funded by the Digital Europe Program. Does this make sense? So you have to distinguish funding initiatives more like innovation that the Commission promotes together with the member states from long-standing, you know, policy initiatives which have, let's say, their own governance and are slower to adopt new technologies just because, of course, they have a different governance process. Was I more or less clear about this?
Thank you, João. Yes, we'll make sure that, you know, I understand the European landscape is articulated. So we'll make sure that, you know, we'll take your explanation then, revisit it or add additional resources for the members of this group. You may go
okay.
on.
What is important for you to understand is we, as European Commission, are working with the member states in this structure called the European Blockchain Partnership in promoting this innovation track, which is really to use W3C verifiable credentials in the cross-border verification of diplomas. So this was done. This was, let's say, there were grants given and provided to universities interested in doing that. So we have done that, and this is what we are showing to you. And we are currently working with the policy DGs so that the results of this pilot is now adopted by them in their own policy initiatives, which again are not as mandatory because of the field of education. The field of education has a certain, let's say, limit by the European Commission. We cannot, like, you know, that's subsidiarity. The member states know better how to run it. But there are quite some important initiatives that are currently working with us to eventually adopt the results of our pilots. So what we have done is the typical model of W3C, which is now shown on the screen, where we have a holder, meaning a student that goes to a university, asks for the issuance of a diploma and receives it on its digital wallet and presents it to a verifier. And we have tried to have the verifier in some other member state. So that's the typical use case. Now, what we come here to present in more detail, because we could present, of course, the Aeropass data model, the claims were expressed as Aeropass, is the, in the verification step, we have created a new, also an innovative model to ensure that the verifier can trust the issuer, what we call an issuer trust model. And that has been done using blockchain. So that's where, let's say, blockchain comes into play, not really to, let's say, store the diploma. That's not the case at all. The diploma is only stored on the digital wallet. And even information about the deed of the holder, because we also use W3C deeds both for issuers and holders, but not for verifiers because they don't get a deed. Only issuers and holders, even the deed of the holder will be only stored on the wallet. So the sort of deed document of the holder is only on the wallet. But on the other hand, on the blockchain, we have all the information about the issuers. And why did we decide to do this on the blockchain? To decentralize the information, not depend on the central point where we would store all public keys and the information of whether or not the issuer is accredited to issue this type of diploma. We have done it on the blockchain because we believe that the blockchain has certain advantages to hold the information of issuers. And of course, because we don't want to put the verifier in contact with the issuer. So it's also a way to not call home, you know, not have the verifiers calling issuers. The verifiers can simply go on the blockchain. We provide a number of services that can be consumed by any verifier app in read mode and read the information necessary to retrieve the deed document of the issuer, to retrieve what we call the accreditation of the issuer that enables the issuer to be trusted to issue that type of education credential. And we also have the typical revocation list that is stored on chain. So this is where we have used blockchain, and this so-called trust model for issuers based on blockchain is what is the subject of the talk of today. So I get here, it's where Alan is now going more into detail, and Alan is our lead architect. He is definitely, I would say, the person that can know whether or not, let's say, at technical level, this is the wisest decision that we have made, and he's here to give you a bit of his wisdom. Alan, are you there?
Yeah, let me share my screen and I can take it from here. Okay, do you see my screen? Yes, you do. Okay, so first, before I go to slides, here are just a few pages where you can find all the relevant information. So this will all shared in the chat. So everything about EBSI, everything about wallet conformance testing, and here in what is EPSI, you will find different chapters that cover everything from verifiable credentials. The IDs as we use them in EBSI, Digital Identity Trust Issuer Model, and Exchange of Verifiable Credentials, and some chapters that will be published soon. Okay, now let's go. Sorry, I need to share it again because of this. Now let's go to the presentation. Wait, for some reason I cannot see this one. Just one second.
I wonder if there are any questions from the group as Alan, you had sharing. Yeah, apologies. We use Jitsi, this open source platform, so it's sometimes running into these issues.
Any questions?
Question in the chat. So how do issuers get registered in the blockchain?
That's exactly what we want to show you. We have created, as you will see now, a way to reflect the chain of trust of issuers, and everything is online. But so the idea is that an issuer of a diploma is accredited by an institution, such as in Europe, a Ministry of Education, to do so. Now, that Ministry of Education might be at national level, might be at regional level. And therefore, there is not like just one actor in this accreditation process. There might be several actors, and we need to have a chain of trust that works on chain so that you have the information that you require to trace back the trust on that specific issuer to the highest level authority in the member state or even at European level that shows and demonstrates that the issuer can be trusted for that specific type of education credential. And that has been really the innovative part, because all the other options that we saw, they were quite simple. So they just said, either you trust an intermediary platform that is known for containing information about trusted institutions, so you trust that platform, or you trust a certificate that is qualified, and therefore you trust the issuer of the certificate of the qualified, and therefore you trust the entity. And according to us, that those two alternatives, they have quite some embedded limitations that we try to overcome by using verifiable credentials to express the trust of chain of institutions. And we will show you now.
Yeah, okay, so here is a very brief overview of what will be presented in this chapter. So we will just go quickly through different trust models that are used today and how EBSI can help to map the trust relationship into the digital form so that verifiable credentials are easily verifiable. Then we will explain some of the details of EBSI's issuer trust model and what are the benefits. And in the end, I will show you some examples that early adopters produced in one of our programs, where different universities showcased like cross-border exchange of student diplomas. Okay. So in the classical trust model of issuers, the information about the holder is usually exchanged directly between the issuer and the verifier. And then verifier usually calls and checks with the issuer directly whether or not that credential is still valid. It was really issued by that issuer. So, and this is called phoning home. Of course, phoning home causes several issues because it allows user traceability. And that's one of the reasons why we'd like to avoid such a model. So the three main challenges are the technical burden, because it places, there's a technical requirement, so the issuer always needs to be online and always available so that verifiers can check the status anytime. There's some operational burden, which requires verifiers to create and maintain interaction with all the issuers they want to basically check the verifiable credentials from. So the number of required interaction increases with the number of issuers verifiers want to interact. And there's, of course, a privacy challenge because issuers could always learn with which verifiers holders interacted. So this is... So these are the main three challenges that we want to solve. And of course, with the W3C and SSI, a new information exchange model was introduced, where issuers have their own decentralized identifier. They issue credentials to holders, and holders present the credentials to the verifier. And now EBSI, as a fully decentralized framework or service, enables to make the verification of verifiable credential easy and reliable without needing to contact the issuer directly.
Or to have a centralized model. Yeah, correct.
So EBSI is just like an infrastructure that hosts all the information. So EBSI is not an entity that controls and oversees. So all the information in the ledger, as we'll see, is controlled by the trusted accreditation organizations and trusted issuers themselves for each domain. Here we present the three conceptual trust models. And the first two are used frequently today. First is the centralized trust model, where we have one entity which manages all certificates and the keys. We have the federated trust model, where these operations can be delegated to different intermediary certificate authorities. And one example is Europeans list of qualified trust service providers, where national bodies maintain the list for their own country. And there's the distributed trust model, EBSI, which is completely open in a sense that there's no central entity that controls the roots of trust or trust chains or the relationships, but it allows mapping all the information into a digital form so that verifiable credentials are easily verifiable. And this service is, since it's fully distributed, replicated, it's always available. And also breaks the link between the verifier and the issuer, and also takes off some operational burdens from both entities, because now verifiers can easily check accreditations on of any issuer who is in the, within the ecosystem, and they don't need to create special connections with all the different issuers in the field. Now, how EBSI's trust model compares to other trust models? So the most widely used is the centralized and federated trust models, which rely on certificate authorities and X509 certificates. This structure is not as flexible, and it's usually applied only for identity credentials. We know that X509 are usually public keys bound together with legal entity or natural person identity. And those are then issued, and in that ecosystem, we have several roles: certificate authority, registration authority, validation authority, distribution authority. And the whole structure is not very, very like agile, or it cannot adapt very easily to different scenarios or use cases. Whereas in EBSI, based on the business requirements we got from different use cases and all the stakeholders involved, we came to a trust model where only two roles were required. These are trusted accreditation organizations, or TAO, which basically identifies, verifies, accredits the so-called trusted issuers who issue electronic documents or verifiable credentials. Trusted issuers that are accredited by TAOs can then issue certain types of verifiable credentials and sign them either via their existing certificates or DIT keys that are used for signing. Okay, now let's take a look at EBSI's trust model and how it works. Here we present the relationship and onboarding of so-called DAO and trusted issuers. And basically, in order to create a new chain of trust for a given domain, we need to identify, or the domain needs to identify organizations with which can issue some information about the accreditations for trusted issuers. These TAOs register schemas in the EBSI's Trusted Schemas Registry. Schema is a JSON schema which defines the data model of the verifiable credentials that is going to be issued by trusted issuers within the domain. And for example, TAOs can be ministries. So one example would be like Ministry of Education within a country, which is then responsible for accrediting all the universities or a set of universities in that country. Trusted issuers, once the root of trust is set, can then request from TAO an accreditation. It's the standard verifiable credential exchange. So trusted TAO identifies a trusted issuer, issues the verifiable accreditations, and then trusted issuers register their accreditations in a self-sovereign way on EBSI. So here we see that there's no entity within EBSI which would register information on behalf of others, but everything is managed by the actors within the domain. And then EBSI acts as a public ledger of issuers, so it contains information about trusted accreditation organizations, their DIDs, their DID keys, and so about the trusted issuers and schemas which are issued by the issuers within the given domain.
Alan, before we go into more detail, given that this is actually the conceptual model and everything builds on that, maybe we can ask if there are any questions at this point, the previous slide. Because this is the essential conceptual model, or it's is this, let's say, making sense to the people working in this group? Have you seen something similar? Does this seem to make sense? There is one raised hand.
Yes, yeah, please. So, go ahead, David.
Yeah, it's. I don't know if you're familiar with the train project, which was run by Fraunhofer as part of the ESSF lab. But in their model, they are using the ETSI trust list, which are part of a YIDAS, and their model is much more like yours, where there's the trusted operator, and the operator validates the trusted service providers and then inserts them into the ETSI trust list. So it isn't, it isn't like your description of the PKI model, which you had on the left-hand side. It's much more like your model, and only it replaces the blockchain with a digitally signed ETSI EE-DICE trust list. I don't know if you're aware of that project.
We are not, but indeed you can use a specific trust list. So I guess that they're not using the trust list of trust lists from, let's say, EIDAS. They are creating a sector-specific trust list, most likely, right?
Yeah, we've defined we defined our own particular type of trust list. I also discussed with the ETSI people how we could support DIDs. So it also supports DIDs, so the issuers could indeed have X509 certificates, in which case it would be an absolutely bog standard ETSI trust list, but they can also have DIDs, in which case we have some proprietary fields that we fit in, and that seemed to be in line with the EIDAS model, because it allows countries and operators to define their own codes for certain fields. So it also supports DIDs as well.
Very, very interesting. I mean, I don't know, Alan, do you know about this specific variant to the trusted list model?
I know about the project and the model there. It's, to my understanding, it's DNS. It's also DNS based.
That's correct. Correct. Yeah.
So it has some like nice properties, and it's applicable to certain use cases. But to add to that, what we're presenting here is like a very broad model. And it also, so when it comes to a particular domain, within that given domain, it's up to the use case basically. So we define or like EBSI only defines an envelope of what we call a verifiable accreditation. And so very basic, I can share the link to the data models and schemas. It's a very basic data model, and that can be, is usually then extended by domain specific properties, which can be basically anything as long as it's like verifiable in a simple way. So it can express any relationship or limitations. For the Europass, I think they call it accreditation records. They mapped the accreditation records data model into a verified credentials form. And that is basically, if you check the schema, you see that it takes the basic or like the core verified accreditation schemas and then schema and then extends the subject properties within the verified credentials with the domain specific claims so that it can really control to the level to like really introduce a fine grained control of which university can issue exactly which diploma recognized within the field. We also
do that in train. So we within the service provision, there's a URL that you can put to where the service is obtained from, and that points to the schema. So from the ETSI trust list, you actually get the URL of the schema, and that tells you exactly the properties that the issuer is allowed to insert into credentials. So we've also got that within the train model.
Thank you. There is a question around the framework for revocation.
Shoot.
Yeah, the question is just that, you know, what framework is used for revocation?
Okay, maybe Alan there, maybe move then to the next slide and we can quickly touch upon that. Because you already see there that we can build revocation on top of the EBSI ledger as well. So the idea is let's build the whole trust model around verifiable credentials. Let's create this accreditation data model that is going to be fairly flexible to accommodate the trust chain of issuers, essentially the Ministry of Education empowering a regional entity to then empower issuers for, you know, specific education domains. That's all verifiable credentials native, so that is the idea. And then the second idea is we can use EBSI to make available the deed documents of all these issuers, the accreditation verifiable credentials of all of them as well. And thirdly, any revocation information that the verifier needs to make the decision of whether or not this diploma is authentic or valid. So this idea of a passport. So when they get the diploma, they have access to all the information they need to make that decision. Maybe Alan, go ahead. And
I'm sorry. There is also another question. I want to make sure that I get to Lucy, who put herself in the queue. Lucy, please go ahead.
Thank you. I was just about to ask if I can. I had a comment on the earlier discussion on train a model. So I'm working on a project that actually use train for a higher level trust and directory. So it's pretty much like EBSI ledger is a level lower, which means like you, like the trusted, I think the TAO you mentioned here, they're managing their own list. But if there's any higher level discovery, especially globally. For example, if you're thinking about COVID, there are different kind of trusted entities who are having their own list, right? But how to actually bring them together. So the training model is very flexible in the sense that they can deal with whatever EPSI is doing, but also higher level. They leverage DNS, as Ellen already mentioned, and they can work with both X509 and JIT. So it's very, very flexible. So kind of can list existing trust registries on a higher level directory for kind of global level discovery. So that's something I'm working on, like particularly for COVID and health credentials. And also earlier, I was on a call where in India presenting their trust registry called Sunbird. I think it's something like kind of at the eco level with EPSI. But if there anything, for example, you're talking about education credentials, right? If Europe is using some kind of service for European educational credentials, where India is using their thing for educational credentials, how are you going to do like globally when like, you know, students or people move around borders to actually find out who is trusted in different regions? So that's what I want to comment on.
But you believe that the model that we are showing here, and of course, all models are wrong, but some of them are useful. But the model that we are showing here, as compared to the one that you were just describing, has some advantage, disadvantage. What would be your?
It's complementary. So the idea is that EU has your own regulations, right? And when you're issuing credentials, whether it's COVID credentials or educational credentials, not every other country or regions will be following your regulations. So you need to allow them, right? Then you are allowing them to figure out their own thing. But eventually, if, you know, EU has your own educational registry, right, where India has their own registry, how different registries are going to find each other and build trust at a higher level, it's complementary. It's not conflicting or anything.
What you said there is just very interesting, because exactly this is what we discussed when we briefly prepared this call, is and maybe we can reinforce that idea. We believe that a sort of generic data model for accreditation, because the one we came up with is, you can call it European, but actually it's our project, so it's not even European. But so that would, of course, help different regions to develop accreditation chains based on a similar set of claims about the issuers. So we, or Alan has shared now the data model that we believe, let's say, to meet our needs. But of course, I think what would be interesting is that data model is actually, well, I'm not saying really standardized to the level, but like made global, would really support higher interoperability across Europe, United States, India, but currently there is no such model. That's I think what we want to highlight, is that we had to come up with ours. India will come up with theirs, and once you need to, let's say, have interoperability, you will have a problem, right?
Just a quick time check. We only have 4 minutes left for the official time, so I want to make sure that you cover what you wanted, but also encourage you to make this available and hopefully take any questions that we cannot get to in the course of this call. Thank you.
Can I maybe jump in? Because I feel like the question that was just asked misrepresented slightly what we were trying to explain. The European Commission does not have a centralized verified database of universities. I think probably that's a good place to start. And it's not a competency of the European Union to do so. That is a national competency, in much the same way that India is in charge of its educational policy, and its Ministry of Education or equivalent will be responsible for accrediting reliable educational organizations. It is the same thing for individual countries, member states of the European Union. So what the model that we've built, like Alan and Joao just explained, is not relying on a central source of truth. It is relying on a self-sovereign type of management of accreditations, where as long as a country that is sovereign identifies the appropriate entity for accrediting university bodies in this case, then the whole trust chain can be self-managed. As long as that one institution is identified within one country, the root of trust, then all of the subsequent accreditations, say a Ministry of Education recognizes two regional bodies that manage university accreditations within a region, you know, a subset of the university of that country, all of this is self-managed. I don't know if that helps.
Yeah, that's my understanding. I don't think I misunderstand what you're...
I misunderstood you. Oh, fine.
So we all understand each other, which is actually quite positive. Of course, we know that we are limited when it comes to time, and we wanted just to, let's say, pass the key messages and also to contextualize the work that we are doing, because that's quite important when we leave, so that there are no misunderstandings there as well of where this is going. But maybe, Alan, you want to say something about this, of the data model of the accreditation and how important we believe it is to actually look at this more attentively and eventually integrate this into, let's say, W3C or some entity that could make it really generalized and not only, let's say, EBSI data model?
Yeah, of course. So maybe one thing to add here, because, I mean, comment of Lucy is in place and it's very relevant, but no technology will be able to solve the problem of who trusts whom. I mean, verifiers will always need to decide, like, which, like, issuers or routes of trust they trust. And that's completely independent of the technology of choice or solution or whatsoever. But what is important to maybe let me go to the example from the education use case. It's not showing the right slide, but let's see.
It is.
Ah, it's not showing too. Okay. So what we need to understand here is that the infrastructure and the trust model are completely open. So EBSI can basically host information of as many trust chains or hierarchies or whatever trust relationships as possible. So it's not limited to any specific use case. No, it's not limited to any specific domain. And the beauty of the data model is that it's fairly simple. Everything is linked. So whether it's hosted on EBSI or somewhere else, verifier will always be able to find the path and who accredited whom, whether that accreditation is still valid or not, to which schema it links, who accredited, who registered that schema, and all the relevant information. Now, of course, storing this on EBSI has several advantages, because the information that is stored there, it's all verified beforehand, so that the information that goes on the ledger complies with all the rules for accreditations. So that's one. And the second is, basically, you can have, like, it can accommodate everything from a simple, like, list where all issuers are on the same level, or an arbitrarily complex hierarchical structure, and can also be extended by domain-specific rules for issuance. For example, that a given university can only issue diplomas in a specific region of the country or similar. So those are completely open. I think that these are the points that I'd like to highlight here. And here is a very simple example of a use case when we have, like, a ministry, and we see that depending on the accreditation a ministry has, which is in this case a root of trust, then accredits different bodies within their domain.
So before we close the presentation, I think we want to thank you again for, of course, the invitation and having us here today. All the work that we do is by its nature open source. So you will see that every slide that we showed you today is already available online in one way or the other. We are, of course, more than happy to give you additional information in case you feel that you still have questions after the discussion. And we would support, of course, you in any, let's say, specific challenge that you might see, or let's say additional questions or challenges that you could make to the model, because it's in our benefit. So the more we are able to learn about, like, have you thought about this, or could this also work with that type of questions, we would be more than happy to receive them, because that would be helpful eventually in your group, but also to us in improving the model. So the model is not, let's say, set in stone and closed, is not in a policy document. As I explained, this is really innovation. It's done to pilot, to work with the stakeholders, is not part of really a policy initiative. So we can be flexible, we can accommodate improvements, and we would be more than happy to do so, and this is why we came here today. Even though, I mean, I'm sorry for the issues with the presentation and slides not moving, cameras not working, but I think we try to pass the essential messages to the group. Simone?
Thank you. Thank you, Joao. Thank you, Maxine and Alan. You should know that we have been really looking and sharing the documentation that you've been producing. We've had some of the early adopters come and share their experience with EBSI. This has become an important reference, the work that you are doing, and certainly we're interested in contributing or digging more into it, particularly if I may just kind of set us off on what it could be a possible phase two, is, you know, comparing the issuer trust model in EBSI with what is happening in other regions, for example, the trust over IP governance framework, or, you know, that alone could be an interesting comparison. So I'll, you know, reach out again, and maybe we can set something else up down the road, so we'll make up for the lost time. I do apologize for the tech. Jitsi is not familiar to everyone, so, like, it does take a little bit of time. But we recorded everything. We'll make this available. If there are specific links or documentation that you feel complement what you presented, I'm happy to distribute it in the mailing list.
Thank you very much. I don't know, Maxine, if you want to say something, and Alan, before we say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Simple. Alan?
Well, thanks for having us. If anyone has any suggestions for feel free to check what we produce. And if you have any ideas for improvements, let us know.
Thank you very much, and wish you all a very pleasant evening, and we keep in touch. Talk to you soon.